Ed Huff from Old Town, Maine. Politicians, when they speak publicly, always have a definite position that they have. Do they ever, in private conversations and in committee meetings, express some hesitancy about what to do? Some
That is an excellent question. Yes. Now, they cannot show to the public any sign of being unsure. But they are very unsure. They're scared many times. And so they rely on their staff. That's why you should also be praying fervently for congressional staff. It's the staffers who form many times the opinions of the office, and they inform the member. And often once the member has publicly said something, to save face, they would never change their mind because they're more concerned with saving face than, you know, the truth on some issue that they may not really completely understand. And most issues have many facets. You know, most issues are not simple. And one thing that frightens me is that members don't have time to understand all the complexities of issues. They just want a simple, you know, yes or no, good or bad, right or wrong. And sometimes issues cannot be understood at that level. So the answer to your question is that, their minds do change. They do waffle and worry behind closed doors. The scary thing is they often don't have time to learn the issues in depth. But even more thoughtful members will change their mind and even their public stance. Mr. Bollert, the chairman of our committee, was against increasing the funds for the National Science Foundation at some, what he considered a totally random level, for good reason. Why should you increase the funding for an agency without knowing exactly the level you should fund it? But after being persuaded about this argument that you need to have advancements in basic research as well as in the applied and the fruits of the research, such as health discoveries, he was totally persuaded in the opposite direction and came out publicly in support of the, another point of view. So it does happen, but behind closed doors, they change their minds, they waffle and they worry, yes.
Can you think of any way in which the structure of government and committees might be improved so that a more rational process of government might take place?
Dictatorship, maybe? No. Just kidding. I think about that a lot. I mean, because there are frustrations. You know, a piece of legislation will be entered. Have you ever heard the phrase, it died in committee? You know, a piece of legislation will be introduced, and then it gets sent to the relevant committee, and if the particular leader of that committee just doesn't happen to like that piece of legislation, they don't do anything with it, and it doesn't go anywhere. It isn't as bad as that sounds, because a lot of legislation that's introduced never was meant to go anywhere. The person was just doing it to make some kind of a public stance, when in private they really didn't want their introduced piece of legislation to go anywhere. So I think the structure works as well. You know, it, for all of its problems, it does work in some sense. I think one thing that could be improved upon is on committees where there is not so much bipartisan cooperation, if hearings could have a better, wider variety of opinions coming through, if conference committees that are looking at legislation that comes from both the House and the Senate, again, that's one of my biggest worries, is that you have some piece of legislation that's been argued and debated and passed publicly in the House and the Senate, and then privately that piece of legislation is changed all around as the conference committee meets. I think that should be changed. Your question is rather broad, so I think we'd have to sort of discuss specific issues before I could sort of make any more recommendations, but there are certainly improvements. And I think one of the major improvements is just to get good people in there on the staff and as members of the House and the Senate.
Science who teaches the legislative process, say one thing. If there was one single thing you could do to improve the process, would be public funding of elections so that the people would not be beholden to the givers.
Well,
that would be the most important thing. The quality of the staff, the quality of the members has increased in the last 25 years tremendously. But we have very difficult problems, and they are beholden to money.
Yes, that's true.
And so that one thing, if you all would go out of here and say, I'm for public funding, and start communicating that to the newspapers and to the politicians and so forth, that would be the one thing that we could do to remove and improve the system.
Oh, okay.
Congratulations on your fellowship, which is rooted in ethical coming from a private organization where volitional choice is the basis of its very existence. There is a critical assumption at the very basis of the massive government that now dominates our lives, and that is the assumption that it is right and good for government to be an agent of goodness. The problem is, the government can do virtually nothing without coercion, mainly forcible taxation. And this, of course, is absolutely central to leftist ideology. Yes, I have a question. The problem is that the New Testament is very clear that coercion is bad news, and the role of government is very carefully circumscribed. My question is, would you care to comment on how an understanding of the New Testament can better help us to discern what's going on and keep our thinking from becoming more dominated by leftist ideology, which is very much unspoken?
Okay, well, I think we don't want to be dominated by leftist or rightist or any mentality, but I do think that there are two principles in the New Testament. One is, giving to Caesar what is Caesar's and giving to God what is God. And the other thing is that I believe I still have a very positive viewpoint that our country, thankfully, still has freedoms in terms of, you mentioned taxation, and while we all complain about taxation, I think the majority of people would still say that we need some taxation for the good of others. In other words, part of our Christian values is reaching out to others, and many of us would say, well, the best way to do that is not through government. We can do that on our own. But yet there's maybe some level where government is the best way, to build roads that benefit everyone, to, in some level, I know there are arguments about this, but maybe some involvement in education, healthcare, this kind of thing. And because we're a democratic government, we have to come to some sort of consensus on how much of that burden should come from taxpayers' money. And some will say, most people will say, well, we're being burdened too much, and that's probably true. But I don't think many people would say that we should have no taxation at all when you think about that. So, and it becomes a matter of democracy and sort of majority consensus. And so I don't know. I know that we're worried in many ways about ideologies that are coming into our government and into our country, but I still don't know of a better system. Who was it that said that this, for all its flaws, our government system is still the best in the world? And I still agree that that's true. And I think as long as we in the grassroots are being informed about various ideologies and things, that will help us in who we elect and who we run and how the ideals that we want get infused into our national policy and our government. So.